Well, hi there, and welcome back to the Hugo's There podcast. I'm your host, Seth Heasley, and I'm reading the Hugo winners one guest at a time. My guest for this episode is Scott McNulty of Random Trek, among many other podcasts on the Incomparable Network, and we're going to be talking about C.J. Cherry's Cyteen, which won the 1989 Hugo. So, Scott, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk about this gigantic book that I picked without realizing how gigantic it was.
Yes. Good Lord, what have you done, Scott?
And it's out of print. Can't get it in an ebook format.
That is true. And so all you get is the Oxford English Dictionary size. So I mentioned Random Trek and The Incomparable. Why don't you talk about that? Where would people know you from?
Sure. So people probably will, a long time ago, people would know me from my technology writing, but I haven't written much about technology in years, but I have written 10 technology books. So if you search my name on Amazon.com, you can buy a variety of out-of-date technology books, if you like, for your legacy technology. But now, I think mainly people, if they know me from podcasts on the Incomparable Network. Chief among them, I host a podcast called Random Trek. The idea is simple. I talk about a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. There's one rule in Random Trek, and that is no episode of Random Trek is longer than the episode of Star Trek we're talking about. So 44 minutes nice. Or less, generally, unless it's an original series, then 50 minutes or less. And I appear on other Incomparable Network shows from time to time. And I'm also currently hosting, well, currently I'm on this podcast, but I am hosting a Flashcast. The Incomparable has a number of Flashcasts about TV shows where we watch a current TV show, the latest episode, and then we immediately do a podcast about it. And I am hosting the Incomparable's Star Trek Discovery Flashcast.
That makes a good deal of sense. If I was caught up, I would know that, but I'm not. So, okay. I have not taken the plunge for CBS All Access, I'll admit it.
It is a high bar to get that access, but if you're a Star Trek fan, I recommend it. Although, if you are an economical Star Trek fan, I recommend you wait until they've broken it up into two halves of a season, really. So they're going to have 9 episodes, and then I think 8 episodes or 6 episodes or something. So you could either wait for the first 9, pay for CBS All Access, binge watch the 9, and then cancel, and then wait for the rest. And then
right.
That's what I would do if I were smarter.
Yeah, I may get to it one of these days, but probably not through CBS All Access, so we'll see. Mm-hmm. So why don't you tell me a bit about your kind of nerdy history?
A nerdy history? Well, I think I have always been a nerd. When I was a kid, unbeknownst to me, I was reading a lot. I was not super talkative. I grew up in New York with a large Irish Catholic family, extended family. My nuclear family was only 4 people, including me. Everybody was very talkative, kind of stereotypical New Yorkers, boisterous. I, not so much. I would read a lot and watch Star Trek and things like that. Mm-hmm. And many years later, my mother said to me, you know, your grandmother said that you were either going to be a genius or a serial killer because of the amount of time that you spent reading. And I said to myself, why not both? But no, I am not a serial killer, nor do I think I'm a genius. But just to set the tone for kind of my life, my early life there, I've done a lot of reading. I'm a big reader. That's probably the first geeky thing about me. And then, of course, I fell into writing about technology. I love Star Trek. I like Star Wars. Shout out to Star Wars. But I do love Star Trek. I'm surrounded by maybe, I don't know, 1,100 books. I'm wow. obsessed with Kindles, so I have like 10 of those. I have a sheet of Star Trek stamps on my desk as I'm looking at it. So, and oh, plus I played D&D for a long time. I didn't mention The Incomparable has a D&D podcast where I am the dungeon master for certain adventures. So, you know, I think I'm checking off all the nerd boxes here.
Nice.
I'm trying to think of there are some areas of nerdery that I do not get into. Like, you know, there are people who are obsessed with, like sports statistics and things.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I thought that one you're probably not checking. I've heard your antipathy for sports.
That is not an area of nerdery that I respect, but I do not find it interesting.
That's one reason I was up so late reading the book is I was watching baseball. So, and I was reading on the commercials.
Of course, as you do.
Yeah. So I asked you to tally up how many Hugo winners you've read to shame me. So Why don't you tell me?
Hugo winning novels, I assume, because that's what I tallied up.
That is correct.
According to my tally, I have read 37 of them.
Nice. That's a good number. And almost, more than twice as many as I've read. I've read 18, so, which is why I'm doing this podcast.
Well, there you go. So which one so far has been your favorite?
Probably Hyperion in terms of the new ones that I've read. I think Speaker for the Dead is still my overall favorite, but that's mostly nostalgia because I've read it a lot of times. But Hyperion was tremendous. So, you know, I think I'm to 19 now, actually, with this one, because this was a new one for me. And I think since the very first episode that I did of this, this is the first time where both I and my guest had not previously read it, if I'm getting that correct, actually, Scott.
That is correct. I chose this book because I hadn't read it. I knew nothing about it, frankly. I was looking at the list of Hugo Award winners that you sent along when you graciously invited me to be on the podcast. Thank you again. And I thought, I've read a good number of these books. And then I recognize a lot of the authors of the books I hadn't read. And I, CJ, I don't know how to say your name. How do you say your last name?
It's just Cherry.
Cherry. Oh, there you go.
Unnecessary H.
What's up with that H? Now, I have seen her books in bookstores forever. Mm-hmm. In fact, on my shelf with those 1,100 other books, I have three of her books, her Foreigner series. I think that's what it's called, which I think she's probably most famous for. And I've heard great things about it. I've never read anything by her. And I've wanted to. And so I saw her on the list and I was like, hey, I know nothing about this book, but I know people like her. So, let's give it a read.
Nice. And that was what I was going to ask you, was why you had chosen this book. Why, for the love of God, did you choose this book?
I did not check the length or the size of pages for the book before I picked it.
I would not have been threatened by 680 pages unless I had known the size of those pages. because it definitely reads more like 1,100 than 680.
There are usually large pages. And I'm not sure that this book needed to be 1,100 pages, but we can talk about that.
We'll get back to that, yeah. I'm curious, when I saw the title, I pictured it was going to be about a cybernetic teenager. did you have any preconceptions?
That was also kind of my guess. I had no concept of what it was. I did not even realize that it was kind of, she had written a bunch of books in kind of the same, I guess, alliance/union universe that this is kind of part of. I had no idea. As I said, I'd only known her by the Foreigner books, and I think that's what they're called. Mm-hmm. And I haven't read any of those, so I don't know anything about them. They may even take place in the same universe. I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know either. I don't know enough. This is my first exposure to her. I think her first Hugo winner was Down Below Station, which is in the same universe. And so when you picked Cytene, I thought, I wonder if we should read that first. But I did a little bit of Googling, and people are like, no, it doesn't matter. Just start wherever you want. So, okay, we'll get back to that.
Maybe Down Below Station is shorter.
Yeah, one would hope. So, can you give a quick, kind of moving into non-spoiler discussion of the actual book, would you be able to give a quick synopsis of the book without too many spoilers?
Yeah, well, see, that's the problem with this book. I feel like, and you tell me if you agree, I feel like the first 80 pages of this book, I was thinking were going to be two very different books happening, because there's a point at which someone kind of, well, I guess it doesn't matter because it's the first 80 pages.
Yeah.
Grant is a character and he kind of escapes from this research station that they're on because of a variety of political machinations. And so I thought, oh, this is going to be a story about Grant escaping, living, you know, roughly on this planet that's kind of half terraformed, half isn't. And, you know, the chase to find him because they don't want anything bad to happen to him. But no, he comes back in like three pages after that. And I'm like, okay, well, this is not the story that she's telling. And there's a main character, what's her last name? I forget. Emery. Yeah, Ari Emery. I don't know. I'm very bad with names, as anyone who's listened to any podcast I'm on.
Ariana Emery is the way I pronounced it in my head.
And so she's the main character, pretty much, I think. Well, there are a couple of main characters, but she's one of the big characters. And I thought, okay, well, now that Grant is back, we're going to follow her and see what happens with her, right?
Right.
And we do kind of, except that she is like 140 years old in this book because they're rejuvenation processes.
Right.
Then, shortly after Grant comes back, that character is murdered. And I think, well, now we're going to find out, you know, it's going to be an investigation of her murder, but it's not.
Right.
So, but the thing that you need to remember, I think the important thing is that there's this company called Renews. I don't know how you'd say it, but
I'm not sure either. I think in my head I was pronouncing it Resuna, but
Resuna. We'll go with that because that sounds better than anything I just tried to say. That creates clones that are programmed to do particular tasks.
Right.
And they have different kinds of flavors of clones that you can get, anything from a farmhand to a almost human, but I guess they are kind of humans already, kind of fully functional person.
Right.
That can do, and those are the alphas on one end, and on the other end are, I forget what the designation is, but they're
I don't either.
Probably some other Greek letter.
Probably. And you'd think it would be Omega, I guess, but...
I don't know. And they do, they spend a lot... This book spends a lot of time talking about psych sets and...
Yes.
Sociogenesis and all kinds of things that are fairly interesting, but they kind of drop you out of the plot. Like, the plot comes to a screeching halt, and a character will give a monologue about a fake science for several pages.
Right. Well, there's the interstitial chapters, too, where it's excerpts from various proceedings, and that's those are just basically big exposition dumps.
Yes, and I'm doing a very poor job of summarizing this. So the basic high level is there's this important person named Eri. She's done amazing scientific work. Her parents have founded this company that is stationed on or headquartered on Cytene. Cytene is the governmental seat of the Alliance,
I think? Union.
Or the Union. Okay, the Union. The Alliance is another kind of competing governmental federation. There are aliens in this universe that are mentioned, but we don't meet any.
Right.
And they're on this kind of half-terraformed planet, and she spends a lot of time telling us about the Union's government setup, which is very strange.
Yes.
but Eri is not only head of this company, she's also, technically she's not head of the company, but she is head of the company. She's also a member of, the ruling council, and so you think, okay, she's important. Then she dies, which is not really a big spoiler because it happens pretty early in the book. Mm-hmm. And then she's dead, but part of her research was trying to create clones of people who died that are important and then basically making them back to the same person through, mind, deep set mind tapes and other things like that. So they create, they decant her clone, and then basically the rest of the story is following her clone for her first, 20 years of life as she navigates through, coming back to will she or won't she become like Eri, and what happens with that. And then there are other characters that are kind of important. Justin is a very important character, and he is another one of these, PRs? Parental PRs, replicants or something? Mm-hmm. So he's a clone of his father. His father and Eri have a complicated relationship, and then he has a complicated relationship with Eri, and then it gets even more complicated when Eri's PR becomes kind of infatuated with him for different reasons. So it's very complicated. But that's kind of the whole, in the thumbnail, my elevator pitch for this story.
Okay.
It's a long elevator ride, okay?
it's like the turbo lift in Star Trek. It runs as long as it needs to for the conversation happens.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, so kind of overall thoughts on this one. Scott, you've given some hints about what you thought of the book, but now is the time to tell me.
Oh, okay. Well, this is the time. I thought it was... I could see why it won a Hugo, because it is super interesting.
Yeah.
It's got big ideas. It's very complicated, kind of webs of characters interacting. There are multiple layers of things going on, which is kind of, something that I really like when you've got characters who have a variety of motivations, and there are external forces at play that we don't really understand, but we know that they're there. The other problem I had with it, though, is, as I said, there are whole sections of the book where the plot is not super complicated.
Yeah.
But it just kind of comes to a screeching halt when she explains in deep. She's obviously done a lot of thought about how this kind of, this technology about programming people, how it's come to fruition and how it works. And so she really wants to tell everybody. the intricate details of this fake technology she's thought about.
Right.
And so we find out a lot about it. She also spent a lot of time, it seems to me, thinking about how the union government works. And yes. So she wants us to know exactly how the union government works, which I don't really need. I found it interesting that some of the counselors were trying to do things for a variety of reasons, but I didn't really need to know that, you know, there are 9 counselors and then the science people get together and vote this way usually, and I didn't need to know anything.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, the especially those late in the book, there were a couple weird digressions into the, like, we were talking about our core characters and then it would branch off and we'd talk about what was it, Corbyn or something? Some random muckety muck would be talking with somebody about a conspiracy they were working on for one little sub chapter, and then it would move on.
And
back to the people that I actually cared about. And so that's kind of my biggest takeaway from this was it was pretty slow going in the beginning. I think I started reading this book in September and it took me probably 2 weeks to get past page 100, because I just couldn't find the will to read it. Because right at the beginning, there's a lot of that kind of table setting of what the government is like and lots of, you know, state dinners and descriptions of all the different people and the family that was at Rizuna. So, because everybody's related to everybody.
Right. They're either blood relations or clones of one another.
Yeah. But once we got past that and we got to kind of our core 5 characters, and for me, that's original Eri plus new Eri, and then the Florian and Catelyn or Caitlin and their clones as well, and then Justin and Grant. When it was following them, I thought it was terrific. It was really, really interesting, despite the fact that there's almost no action in the book. I was really interested in it, but anytime it strayed off and talked about one of the other characters, I was much less interested.
Yeah, the other characters are, well, there's Jordan, right, who is Justin's father.
Right.
And I also question why she named Jordan and Justin so similarly, because I had a hard time in the beginning.
Yeah.
Being like, oh, is that the father or the son? Because it starts off there together, and then he is kind of shipped off to the far corner of Cytene, for a variety of reasons.
Yeah.
And I had trouble keeping track of who was who there at the beginning.
I did as well, yeah. Like, which is the older one?
Exactly. Couldn't you just call, you know, one like Sam or something? That would have just made it much easier for me. But I guess it makes sense, you know, if you are the kind of person who says, you know what, I want to raise a clone of myself, you're going to name them something very similar to your own name.
Right.
But then, yeah, there's like a bunch of counselors and a couple of uncles and various kind of functionaries at the government and the company that we kind of follow for split seconds. And she does a lot of moving around of people and talking about these conspiracies and terrorist bombings. And, you know, there's this colony that was rediscovered that was full of clone people. And it's like, none of this really matters to the story that she's telling. And I don't really understand why it's all there.
Yeah. It seems to me that the book is about 30 to 40% digressions, that aren't really followed up. So.
Yeah, and are we past the spoiler section where I can talk about what my biggest pet peeve is about this book?
No, not quite. Let's one more sort of. If you had to recommend this book, what kind of person would you recommend it to? People who are fans of other media of any kind, you know, so movies, books.
Interesting. Well, I do think it's a good book. I don't know if I would recommend it to anyone, just because I agree with you, the first 100 pages are pretty tough to get through, and I probably would have stopped reading if I hadn't, if I hadn't picked this book myself and made someone else read it.
I didn't strongly recommend this.
That's right. And that's not to say it was bad, it was just kind of like, I do like it when authors kind of drop you in the middle of something. And she does just drop us in the middle of it. The problem is I didn't really care about kind of the political intrigue at that point because I didn't know who any of these characters were. I didn't really understand the politics either.
Right.
And maybe if I had read the book before this, I would have cared a little bit more. I don't know. But I would say that it is a good book. If you enjoy, and this is going to sound maybe weird because it's nothing like a lot of military science fiction that I have read, except that one of the big things in military science fiction, at least that I have read, are these passages that kind of lovingly detail weaponry and armament and kind of give you lists of things on ships and such.
Yeah.
Which I can enjoy. And there are certain passages and pages in this book that are listing things in a similar fashion. So there's, you know, it explains how the government works. It explains how this gene set therapy works, right, and all that kind of stuff. So, it's not weaponry, and there's very little weaponry in here. Although there are a couple of scenes where, what's his face? Caitlin and,
Florian.
The other Florian mm-hmm. are, training as little kids, to kill people.
Right.
But I would think that if you like that kind of thing, if you like high detail, lists of stuff in your books, you would like this. Also, I was struck as reading this, and this is, could be, the kiss of death for a lot of people listening. But I was struck every time I was reading this, I was thinking, this reminds me an awful lot of Ayn Rand books, in that the characters are all kind of motivated by one particular thing. Although in this book, there are more shades of motivation. But then they stop and deliver like monologues to one another,
yes, yeah,
for pages. And so Ayn Rand does that very effectively. A lot of people like Ayn Rand. Mm-hmm. I've read a couple of her books. I find them to be interesting. So I found the ideas in them to be kind of abhorrent, but I find the books themselves mm-hmm. interesting. And so there you go. I think that if you're a fan of Ayn Rand and you're looking for clone books, you should give this a try. It is not, I don't think it's ideologically aligned with Ayn Rand, no, but it is certainly of the same kind of ilk.
Yeah. I would say if you're a fan of, you know, science fiction books about ideas that aren't action books, action-packed books, then this might be for you. If you like the political dialogue and intrigue from The Phantom Menace, which sounds like a terrible insult, really. And really, kind of like you mentioned, like if you like a book that's less on kind of narration and more on dialogue, this one is definitely, it seems like it's almost all dialogue. It's characters talking to each other.
Yes. And not in very kind of natural, she wasn't trying for realistic dialogue. They talk to each other in paragraphs.
They do. Yeah. Yeah. Even when the subject is only, you know, 6 years old. But she's brilliant.
She's a very advanced. She's a brilliant. She's a special.
Right. Well, how about we get into spoilers now so you can vent.
My biggest complaint is that, and maybe it's not really a complaint, the more I think about it, because one of the pivotal things that, you know, starts this all off is that the original Eri is found dead in a cold lab. And Jordan, who's Justin's father, says that he vehemently denies that he did it, until they're like, well, if you didn't do it, we don't know who did it, but we will assume Justin did it because of a variety of reasons. And if you read the book, he has good reasons for wanting to kill her.
Yes.
But he didn't. We know, the reader knows he didn't kill her. We are also pretty sure Jordan didn't kill her. And it comes out throughout the book that maybe it was just an accident.
Right.
But we never really find out if she, or she might have killed herself, but we don't know.
Yes. I really thought that when Eri 2 was going through all the computer system that original Eri had left for her, I really thought there was going to be a revelation that she had programmed Grant mm-hmm. or programmed Florian to murder her because she knew she was dying already. And she knew this would somehow kick off a chain of events that would lead to the outcome that she wanted. But we never really got that.
No, we didn't get it at all. And I was expecting the same thing, like, because as the new Eri comes out, she is given access to this kind of computer system that Eri has set up that has kind of an interactive program that she has created to talk to herself. Right. And it's very clever, I think, that, and it also kind of looks at all these tests that they're doing on the new Eri, and that it unlocks portions of itself as Eri meets certain test criteria and does certain things. Which mm-hmm. I thought was clever, because she is kind of, you know, she is coaching herself on how to be herself. And I thought at some point, like when she was 18 or something, it would unlock a section where we were like, she'd be like, hey, you're probably wondering, about my murder. Well, it wasn't a murder. I killed myself.
Yeah.
Or, you know, your uncle killed me or something like that. I don't know how she would have known if she was killed by someone else, but she seemed like the kind of person who would set up a situation in which someone else would be forced to kill her.
Even if you go to the very, very end of the book, and when Aerie starts coming after Uncle Dennis, I thought, okay, this mm-hmm. this is where we're going to find out. He's going to do his grand villain monologue at the end and say, yes, I killed her, you know, with the hatchet in the drawing room. I guess there was no hatchet in Clue, was there? And no, he's killed off screen, and that's that.
Yeah, very quickly. I mean, the last, and it was interesting too, that the last I felt like, and sometimes this happens when you're reading a long book, and maybe it's just me projecting, but you know, there are 660 pages leading up to the last 20 yeah. pages, and the last 20 pages very quickly just deal with everything and then it's yeah. over. And I felt like it was super rushed, like the big kind of, you know, it turns out that her uncle, well, it's unclear, but it seems to me heavily likely that her uncle, Aerie's uncle, had tried to kill her for whatever reason. I don't really understand.
I didn't get the reasons either, so.
But I think that's what she's trying to tell us. So he tries to kill her, maybe so that she doesn't come back and take over the administration of the company. I don't know. Although he was trying to groom her to do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he was the one who essentially created her, right?
Yes, and brought her up and made sure she had all the right access. But I guess he's had second thoughts because his brother, who was kind of the public face of the company, died. And everyone thought, so in this book, there are, you can be designated as a special right. person, which means that you have, you're highly skilled in something. And so you are basically above the law because you're mm-hmm. so important to the union that, you can't be prosecuted for anything. So that's why Jordan decides to admit to killing Aerie, even though he didn't, because nothing could happen right. to him. But he's just shipped off as punishment.
Well, the other part of that too is the specials can't be subjected to mind probe. And or psych probe, I right. think is what it was called. And so whatever mm-hmm. actually had happened, they could never actually find out if a special admitted to it. And that's why they did it. And that's why, to me, it built up to, okay, there's going to be a reveal at the end about who actually did this.
Right.
And so, like you, that was my biggest frustration, that we never really found out who murdered her.
Yes, we don't know. Maybe I think I've heard perhaps in the next book, there's a sequel to this book that maybe we will find out. I don't know. Well, I'll see how long it is and then I'll decide if I want to read it or not.
Yeah.
But I mean, there are so many interesting things about this book. As I'm talking about it, I think about, you know, there are different levels, like, you know, so Jordan is a special. He creates a parental replicate of himself, who is Justin, who is also technically a special, but the company doesn't want to grant him right. that because of, you know, these machinations. And so he's psych probed so many times. Yeah. And then it comes out that, you know, that makes people kind of suspect his research because his mind may have been scrambled right. by all this psych yeah. probe stuff. And he's researching the same thing that Aerie was researching, but everybody thought Aerie was a genius and thought he was wasting his time, but he's kind of solved a lot of the problems that Aerie was having. So, and then, you know, Aerie one, the original, decides basically manipulated Jordan into creating Justin so that she could get to Justin because she was kind of infatuated with Jordan, and Jordan and Aerie always had this kind of mm-hmm. icy relationship. So there's a lot
yeah.
going on.
Yeah, definitely.
But then it's also interplayed by huge info dumps.
It is, yeah. I mean, I did find, you know, the whole hierarchy of the AZs, which mm-hmm. I thought that was just a reference to the A to Z designation, where an alpha is super, super smart and whatever is on the other end is, you know, a manual laborer or something. That reminded me of Brave New World. I don't know if you've ever read it.
I have.
I'm so glad I'm not a beta. And the idea, yeah, that she had created Grant, that made me think, okay, there's some manipulation going on here that's buried where Grant doesn't even know that he did something. And so when Justin asks mm-hmm. him, you know, did you do anything? He could say, no, I didn't, because he has no real memory of it. And I thought that's – so when Aerie 2 ended up putting both Justin and Grant under psych probe at some point after they had kind of become friends, I thought this is where she's going to discover the deeply buried secret that Grant was the actual murderer. So
she does not.
No.
Or at least she may, but they don't tell us.
Right. Which amounts to the same thing.
Exactly. So. And the other thing that is interesting, you know, the psych probes and stuff, there's a lot, well, maybe not a lot, but there's a ribbon of this idea that this company who has this proprietary software although they mentioned a couple of other, or maybe hardware, I don't know, proprietary process. They mentioned a couple of other companies like 80% through the book, and you think, whoa, where did these come from? But they don't, nothing happens with them. Have the power to change your memories, and not only that, but change your behaviors as well.
Right.
And so Justin spends a lot of time, like we spend maybe, we see, what, 18 or 20 years of Justin's life, and he spends most of that time not even trusting his own perceptions of reality.
Right, because he's got tape flashes. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, is an interesting thing for, I think you and I are around the same age, but just, you know, thinking about tape, you know, in the context of 1989.
Yes.
Where, you know, my videotapes were taping Star Trek.
And we had audio cassettes. It's interesting, fun to read science fiction from, you know, 30 years ago. 30 years ago. Because, you know, she's thinking of this world of the future, and everybody's got tapes, and they're drinking soft drinks, which we still do, but it's just funny. There's not a lot. I mean, it's obviously, it's clearly science fiction, but it's not like, you know, hard science fiction.
Right.
And the science fiction elements are, the important ones are the clones and this kind of, you know, deep set programming, but everything else, there's not like a, there are, but we don't see them, like spaceships and stuff and aliens and things. It's all happening, but we don't encounter any of them.
I kind of had almost retconned it for myself, thought, well, this is kind of like when I say I'm going to tape the baseball game, which what I mean is I'm going to hit record on my Windows Media Center or, you know, DVR. We still use that terminology, even though tape isn't actually being used. Even in, you know, I work at a semiconductor company, and we talk about tape out when we're getting a processor ready for manufacturing. And of course, there's no tape. It's all done on computers. But so that's like kind of what I told myself.
I like that. It's such a powerful name for the process that they just, it is stuck because they've got all these tapes. They've got tape libraries, but there's no actual tapes.
Yeah.
It's all little SD cards or something.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that the AZs, while being fully human, you know, had a limited kind of emotional response, and the idea that they could get knocked off the rails a little bit, and then they would actually ask, I need tape. And so, like, they need to go to the hospital and be readjusted mentally, which was fascinating.
Yes. So that seems to be the big difference between AZs and SITs, as they call them, which are citizens, because an AZ can become a SIT.
Right.
So I guess that's, and so it is that the, and I forget what they have a term for it. Flux. Is that it?
Where? Yes, mental flux.
Mental flux. So humans, or SITs, I should say, because once again, AZs can become SITs.
Right.
Are capable of thinking about several things at once and having them interact and then coming up with some kind of solution or being paralyzed by choice.
Yeah.
Whereas AZs have kind of, they think of one thing, they think it through logically, and they can't really have another idea in their head.
Right.
Unless you're an alpha experimental AZ like Grant, and then you are basically a SIT, but you also need to have a supervisor who you cannot question their judgment. It gets very weird.
Yeah. Where the AZ programming makes you ideal for things like security, where like your whole purpose is keeping Aerie safe, right? Mm-hmm. And so you have the Florian and Caitlin pair that are kind of her confidants, perhaps lovers, I guess.
No, you don't have to guess.
Yeah, it isn't a guess. The sexuality in this book is a little disturbing at some point, because I think Aerie's like 12 when she asks Florian to deflower her.
Yes, and I thought, I don't really need to be reading about this. Nope. And I'm glad that it was basically like she was curious about, like, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
Everybody around that age becomes curious about human sexuality. I was like, okay, this is fine. She watches a couple of tapes, or experiences a couple of tapes, that one assumes would be adult tapes.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, this is fine. And then she says, you know, I should really, try this sex thing with my, slave clone, basically.
Right.
And I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it was quick. She did not detail it, which was good.
Yeah.
But
it wasn't salacious.
I still felt a little dirty reading it.
Yeah, a little bit. So.
And then there's an interesting, you know, as I was reading, Justin and Grant are always spending time together. They live together. And I was like, well, he's his clone servant's guy, so I guess that's why it is. But then it becomes clear that they are in a relationship, and I thought, well, how does... I don't really understand how that's okay.
Yeah, how is that an equal partnership?
Right, exactly. Not that, you know, I don't care that they're both guys, I don't care about that, but it was just like one guy is the supervisor of the other. Like, literally, they say in this book, I think that like their supervisors are God. They cannot question the word of their supervisor. And that just seems like not a good relation dynamic to have.
Yeah. And with Aerie, it seems more kind of impersonal, anything to do with sex, where with Justin and Grant, it's like they're actually a couple.
Right. They're in a real relationship. They support one another. Aerie is much like her first version. She just basically needs to release the pressure through sex sometimes. And she just, it's a tool that she needs to do, and then she moves on. It's not like any kind of deep emotional attachment. And we find out the first Aerie uses this, like she basically rapes Justin, right? Because, and even worse than that, puts in kind of these thoughts in his head that he kind of liked it, but he didn't like it, and all this stuff. It's very kind of messy.
Yeah, well, he even kind of intimates that it's the sex part of it wasn't the bad part. It was the mental part, because she tranked him first, or hit him. What was it called? Cat? Is that what they called it?
Gave him. There's trank and cat that gets you into a deep state of, I guess, openness and willingness to be. Have your mind set, altered.
Yeah.
And so he was fully aware as it was happening, what was happening. And the other kind of the level to that is that he and Grant both are designers of these psych tapes that, determine behavior, in people. And so he understood exactly what was happening to him on multiple levels, but he could not do anything about it. And after it was done, he couldn't even trust his own memory that it actually had happened, or it didn't happen, or he enjoyed it, or he didn't, because he knew that all of those things could be manipulated.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's an interesting character to follow just because of all the tape flashes that he has, and then the fact that he ends up building a relationship back with Aerie too, and he's always very conflicted about it. And so that dynamic was really interesting to me. And, you know, it sounds like for some of this I've been complaining about the book, and like you, I enjoyed it. And the enjoyment came from those core characters, because they were all really interesting, really compelling to read about. It was just when it went off into the weeds that it kind of lost some of that.
There are a lot of digressions that I think could have been taken out. But I see what she was trying to do. She's trying to build this kind of tapestry and enrich the reasons and motivations for her characters and show you how important this company is to Aerie and how, you know, any decisions that it makes are, you know, have repercussions for the entire kind of system.
Yeah.
And how I thought it was interesting. Basically, we spend, I would say, 95% of this book kind of in the hermetically sealed environment of this company.
Yes.
And then at the end of the book, it's suddenly like the things that are happening in here are, you know, making people blow up cafes and subways and things. And we need to go and figure out how to stop this.
Yeah, the peace party is blowing people up in train stations and cafes.
Right. And trying to kill Aerie. And it's just, it was interesting that, you know, we spend so much time basically watching Aerie grow up again into this character that we meet at the beginning of the book, who is kind of much more aware of external things and, you know, working, as Aerie says, the outside world to get what she wants. Mm-hmm. And so it's an interesting choice, I think, on the author's part for us to meet Aerie kind of fully formed and see what the end state should be for this new Aerie. And then, you know, there are points at which many characters are like, oh, that's just like the old Aerie, and oh, old Aerie wouldn't have done that kind of thing. So it's just interesting to see that journey.
Definitely. Yeah. And the Aerie 2 section almost reads like a flashback to earlier Aerie. That's what I was thinking was somebody else might have done this. Okay. And here's what happened, you know, 120 years ago. But in fact, it's happening after Aerie 1 dies.
Yeah. And then Aerie 2 has the additional benefit of knowing what has happened to Aerie 1, although it's interesting they only release her notes from like a couple of years after her current age. So when she's like 12, she can see the notes from when she was 10. But then the big thing is kind of the thing she does with Justin, and they want to keep Justin and her apart, but she is infatuated by Justin, not even knowing who he is.
Yeah.
And everybody is upset about that. And then basically her uncle says, okay, I could give you this tape and you can watch it or experience it. I don't really understand how the tapes work. I think you experience it. You take drugs and then experience the things that are happening. And you find out why we want to keep you away from Justin.
Yeah.
And then so she finds out. And then she realizes, ah, I see what I was trying to do, but I was going about it the wrong way. There's a much better way to manipulate Justin to doing what I want.
Right.
And you think, is that really the lesson you should learn from this, Aerie?
Right. Yeah, because I was going to say that that watching her character kind of grow, because when she's really young, you know, she's pretty awful to other children. And then since the administrators want to make sure that she grows up a certain way, they don't want any particular conflict with other children. And so if another child, you know, punches her in the face or something, well, they get shipped off to Far Gone Station or something.
Which is awful. And then she calls them disappeared.
Disappeared.
They've been disappeared.
Yeah. And so I thought it was interesting to see her then kind of loop back with some of the people that she had terrorized when she was younger and force them to become her friends under threat. Because she did that with Amy,
mm-hmm.
where basically cornered her in a tunnel or something and said, look, we're going to beat your brains out or disappear you unless you be my friend. So besties, right.
You know, and she's like, I guess. Okay. Yeah. Aerie is a super interesting character. Yeah. Not one that is likable.
No.
Certainly when the older Aerie is not likable because we find out she's done this to Justin and it's awful. The younger Aerie is just awful to everybody. And then the kind of late teenage Aerie has harnessed her awful manipulative abilities to manipulate everybody to do what she wants, which is also awful, but she does it, I think, in an even worse way, in that kind of way where you don't realize you're being manipulated. At least when a young kid is awful to you and they're a little mean little brat, you know that they're a mean little brat.
Right.
But when someone who has those skills can convince you that they're doing it for your own good, it's even worse.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, fascinating character. Did you notice all of the lip biting?
There was a lot of lip biting. Yes.
Yes. I started noticing that about halfway through the book, and I thought I should start a tally here. And then I just started chuckling every time somebody was biting their lip until it bled. And I thought, I have never bit my lip on purpose until it bled.
No.
I'd just end up with a mouthful of canker sores, and that wouldn't be good. So.
No, it would be. And they eat a lot of ham, which is salty.
True.
So if you have a lot of canker sores, it would be unpleasant.
It would be very unpleasant. So.
Because that's the thing I noticed. Every time they were eating something, it was almost invariably ham.
Yeah. Well, they didn't have a lot of earth fauna there, right?
They had pigs. They had one horse by the end. I guess they have three or four horses.
I think they had a whole bunch of horses by the end.
That's
because
true.
They can grow them in a horse or outside a horse. They can more or less decant whatever they want.
That's right. And they realized that they could probably sell the horses and make money.
Yes.
So. And that's interesting. I mean, the idea that the planet they are on is a hostile environment is one that is touched upon here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that would be, I thought that was interesting. And I was surprised she didn't make more of it. But Aerie Senior basically has lung cancer because she inhaled some of this. What is it? Wool weed or something?
Yeah, I can't remember what it was.
That is a native plant that goes everywhere, but is deadly to humans. And so she, Aerie, her rejuvenation cycles, process is failing, and she also has lung cancer. So she's going to die. That's how we know.
Now, I thought when it was Justin who told her that she inhaled something when she was younger, toward the end of the book, she told Aerie he told Aerie to that. And my impression was he's giving her a story she can believe just so she doesn't panic about the fact that she's going to get cancer.
That could be.
But I don't know. And maybe this is just me kind of looking at the way everybody manipulated everybody else through the book.
There's a lot of manipulation in this book.
Yeah. Well, I don't have a lot left in my notes, actually, just because it's so fresh. It's different. It's very different doing this when both of us are new to the book. That it's different than like when I had Lisa Schmeiser on. We talked about Neuromancer, and, you know, she's read it a bazillion times. And that makes for a different conversation.
Yes. Well, I will say, after I finished reading it, I thought, I don't know how I feel about this book.
Mm-hmm.
I know it won the Hugo Award. I know it won the Locus Award. I know people like it. I know people like Cherry. I find some of her sentence structure to be odd, but I think that she's a good writer, and certainly has the big ideas and can tell a compelling story without a lot of action, which is, I think, a hard thing to do.
Yes.
And I thought, well, how did I know it won war awards, but how do people generally feel about this book? Because I don't know how to feel about it. And so I Googled it. And one of my favorite authors, who also is a huge science fiction fan and reads a lot of stuff, Joe Walton, has written a couple of things about this book. And she wrote kind of a review of it for, she was doing a series for Tor.com. And at the end of the, she explains the whole plot and she really liked it. She thought it was interesting. And at the end of the book, at the end of the review, she said, I may be a little biased though, because I have read this book at least 40 times.
Wow.
And I thought to myself, A, I've never read any book 40 times. and B, if I was going to read a book 40 times, it would almost certainly not be this book.
Right.
But she really liked it, apparently. So there you go.
Well, if you think about it, send me that link, or I'll try and find it and put it in the show notes, just because, you know, I'd kind of like to look at that as well. I think Joe Walton's a Hugo winner as well, right? Among others?
Yes. She's won, and she's her Small Change series is great. She's one of my favorite authors.
Nice.
So I respect her opinion. I don't know if I quite share it, because I don't think I will ever read this book again.
Yeah.
But it was good.
Yeah, this one, the book was compelling to me, and I would find myself getting drawn into it, and I would kind of lose time, because normally if I'm reading a book, like a normal sized book, you know, I kind of know what my reading rate is. And so if I look down and go, oh, I've read 20 pages, it's probably about a half hour. And I'd look up and an hour had gone by because of the page size here. And so like last night when I was watching the baseball game, I'm like, okay, I've got 120 pages left. You know, I'm good. I've got, it's only 8 o'clock at night. And then
plenty of time.
Then I'm sitting in my kitchen at my kitchen table straight up and down. So I'm not slouching or anything and getting ready to fall asleep, trying to gut through the last 40 pages or something at midnight. So
we had a very similar experience. And that's not to say I didn't enjoy it. I did enjoy it. It was just, it took a lot of time to read it.
It did. Yeah. I was heartened when I emailed you and said, not going to lie, it does not go well. And you were like, I don't know if I'm going to finish. So I was glad.
Yeah, it's always fun to have read a book that, well, I picked this book, but it is kind of assigned, and then there was a date that I needed to read it by. That doesn't happen a lot anymore since I graduated from college. So that's fun, and that changes your experience of the read as well.
It does,
But it was difficult for me as to estimate how long it would take me to read this book, because it is kind of dense in some parts, but also the pages are just a weird size. So it's just like, I don't know how fast I can read this.
I'm going to take a picture of this book next to like an EU standard sized book or something, you know. I've probably got a paperback out on my shelf out there that I'll put it in the show notes and just see what the scale we're talking about here is. Cause
it's strange.
It was also, was not the kind of book that, that I could, like, if I was reading this on a tablet or something, you know, I'd bring it in with me to work, and a few times during the day, I'd go for a walk and sit someplace and read for 5 minutes, but I'm not going to haul around something that size. That's the nice thing about e-readers, is that even a book this size isn't that massive. So,
and on the cover, I'm assuming we have the same edition, and it says complete in one volume, and that made me think, did they break this up into several volumes so that people would read it? And I didn't even understand how that would work.
It was broken up into three volumes at some point, but Cherry hated that. She was not a fan at all. She wanted it as one volume. And I'm curious where it would have divided.
Yes. As I was reading it, I was like, how would you cut this up? I don't even understand.
Yeah.
Because there's no break points, really.
There are jumps of several years in places.
That's true.
So,
but it's a very, like, those were not designed to be discrete sections.
No.
So it would be like, I once read a book by Scott Westerfield, I think, that was clear to me, and I found this out later that it was true, that he wrote this big book, and then the publisher was like, I think it was Scott Westerfield, you know, publishing is a business, and so it had a certain number of pages. And there's a certain number of pages, or at least at that time there was, where binding a book would get more expensive. And they were like, we don't want to spend the money to bind this book in one volume. Mm. So they literally just cut it in half. And it wasn't rewritten to have like a satisfying ending or anything. They just cut it in half, and it was two books now. Because I read the first one, and I was like, it ends, you know, on a cliffhanger, but not like a normal cliffhanger.
Yeah.
And you think, what the heck is going on? It's the Succession series, The Risen Empire and The Killing of Worlds. It just ends. Like, you're like, what? And I didn't realize there was another book to it. I was just like, what happens? And that's how I feel like that's the experience you would get if you read this book in three volumes, because it would just be like, look, Ares visiting a horse, and then it's over.
Yeah. Yeah, although I have to admit, I got to the end of this one and thought, okay, and then what happened? And
yes,
there is a sequel to this one that came out in 2012, so maybe that returns to Cytene? I don't know.
It seems like, I don't know. Maybe, I think I, having just spoken about this book with you, after finishing it last night at like 2:30 in the morning, I thought to myself, I don't know if I'd ever need to read another of this series, but having talked about it with you, I think I have decided that I would like to read the sequel.
All right. Well, I think I follow your reviews on Goodreads, so
I'll look for that. Just see if I like it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anything else you want to talk about Cytene?
I'm glad I read it. I don't know if I would recommend anyone else read it, but it was a good read and interesting. It made me think about things in a different way, which I think is one of the reasons that I read science fiction. I mean, there are a lot of reasons why I read a variety of books, you know, sometimes for the writing, sometimes for characters. And this book certainly had interesting characters, but I think it was, as you said at the beginning, one of these kind of big idea science fiction books.
Yeah.
And it just, she spends a lot of time thinking about the repercussions of this idea, and explaining it. And so I enjoy that. So it's kind of like, it felt a little bit like kind of like golden age science fiction.
Yeah.
But with actual characters.
Right. Yeah. That is definitely a difference from golden age science fiction. And I kind of feel like it almost reads like hard science fiction in places because of those information dumps that you get, even though it's really hard science fiction.
And I think I my favorite part of the book, and then this is the last thing I will stop.
Go ahead.
I think my favorite sections of the book is when Ari is talking to the Ari computer program in like the little interstitial chapters that we get, because the interstitials morph. They start off as like basically like research reports that you don't really understand what they're talking about, and then it goes into kind of, you know, political stuff, but then at the end, they're pretty much always Ari talking to the computer program.
Right.
And I found that very interesting.
I did too. Yeah. Yeah. So kind of final thoughts from me. It is a lot of buildup and not very much action.
True.
But, you know, that being said, I did find it an enjoyable read for the most part. I definitely wouldn't recommend trying to read, you know, the last 500 pages of it in 3 days, because that was difficult. Man, that's my own stupid fault. So if it's one you could take your time with, the chapters are long because it's only, you know, it's 680 pages, I think, and it's only 14 chapters plus the interstitials. And so that makes for pretty lengthy chapters, which I'm not a fan of, actually. Although each chapter is broken up into little subsections, so you can kind of read, and you know, there's lots of stopping points. So this is one that I would recommend taking your time with, and just plan on really taking your time with it.
Mm-hmm. It's long.
So, cool. All right. So Scott, before we sign off, where can people find you?
You can find me anywhere on the internet that has a username of Blank Baby is generally me. So on Twitter, I'm Blank Baby. If you are interested in hearing me talk about stuff, although after this podcast, I'm not sure if you will, check out Random Trek, where I talk about Star Trek more than anyone probably should. And that's what, theincomparable.com/randomtrek.
Nice.
Or you could just Google me. You'll find me.
Nice. Yes. Random Trek is excellent. I kind of formed this podcast as Random Hugo.
Oh.
And I will say, Scott, actually listening to Random Trek and listening to you talk about Deep Space Nine got me to actually go back and finally watch it, because I had started watching it when I was in college, I guess. That's probably when it came out, but then completely drifted away after, you know, a few episodes in season one. And so it was just in the last year that I've actually watched Deep Space Nine and really enjoyed it. So,
oh, good. I was waiting to hear what the verdict was anxiously.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it. So I have not taken any inspiration to go and watch Voyager or Enterprise, though. So.
Well, don't.
No, I like your mantra that, you know, I like all Star Trek, just some more than others. So
exactly. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Scott, for doing this. I really appreciate it, and that you read a massive book with me.
Well, thank you. It was my own fault. I apologize for picking this book without doing my proper research, although I am glad that I read it. So
I am as well.
I don't feel
and,
bad.
You know, this is one I was going to have to hit eventually, so might as well do it now. Well, maybe sometime down the line when I start doing repeat guests, I'll shoot you an email and you can either pick another one that you haven't read or researched or one that you want to go back to. So.
Well, I already have one in mind, so okay. Let me know.
All right. Well, I can we can talk about that offline and maybe I'll pencil you in for that one in, you know, in a year. Because I'm only doing this once a month. I'm not doing it as frequently as Random Trek. So.
That's smart.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for doing this and I'll talk to you later.
All right. Thank you.
Well, everybody, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Scott McNulty, and I definitely encourage you to check out Random Trek and, of course, The Incomparable, where I have had several guests from. So I'll make sure to put links to all that in the show notes. And, of course, I want to thank you for listening and invite you to go check out our website, hugospodcast.com. You can shoot me an email, feedback@hugospodcast.com. You can find us on social media. The username is hugospodcast. And of course, if you want to give us a review, that would really help gain exposure for the show. So if you would leave us a review in Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn Radio, I'd really appreciate that. And that's about it. So thanks for listening. Bye.